Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Captain Serrano, Sweet Delight.
Station Tug 34, permission to grapple.
Permission to grapple.
All fast, on your signal.
Captain Serrano of Sweet Delight, permission to undock on your signal.
All clear on station. Confirm all clear aboard.
All clear aboard.
Graphic Audio presents The Serrano Legacy by Elizabeth Moon. Book 1, Hunting Party, Part 2. Narrated by Nanette Savard. With performances by Colleen Delaney, Sonny Lasky, Andy Clemens, David Coyne, Tess Rowan, Terrence Aselford, James Konacek, James Lewis, Michael John Casey, M.B. Van Dorn, Dylan Lynch, Thomas Penny, Ken Jackson, Richard Rowan, and Mort Shelby.
They were down and not dead. At the moment, that was all he cared about. His hands ached, his ears rang, his whole body hurt. But they were alive and out of the flitter, which now looked far too small to have held so many people in so much fear. Bubbles and Rafa, with far more gumption than he would have expected, had unloaded everything useful from the flitter. The survival raft and all its provisions, the scuffed but whole duffels. George brushed the sand off his and hoisted it to his shoulder.
Never pays to buy cheap luggage. Come on now, Ronnie. Give the girls a hand, can't you?
Ronnie glared at him. He looked, the odious George, as he always did. Fresh, creased, polished to a high gloss. Not a hair of his dark head ruffled, not a smudge. Dip the odious George in shit, some senior cadet had said their first year. And not only wouldn't it stink, it'd take a shine. Now, on the sandy beach, after a flitter wreck, Ronnie thought he knew what he looked like. He said nothing, but picked up two of the remaining duffels, staggered a bit, then dropped them.
What now?
Ronnie clambered onto the flitter. He wished he could remember how he'd gotten out of it.
The beacon. We need to signal for a pickup. Unless you plan to swim back to the mainland.
You gave it to me. You don't remember?
He didn't remember. He crouched on the flitter's canopy, suddenly aware that he was not functioning in some important way. He looked around, blinking. The sea, the sand, the trees. He remembered that. They'd crashed the flitter, and whoever owned it would be furious.
Who crashed the flitter? They aren't designed to crash easily, and George and I are both good pilots.
Ronnie looked at the flitter itself, at the large hole in the engine section, the scorch marks black on the outer skin.
What happened?
Damnation. He's concussed. He doesn't know what's happened or... Oh, come on, ladies. We've got to get him away from here.
Why, George?
I thought you weren't supposed to move hurt people until medics got here.
Someone stronger than Rafa or Bubbles pulled him off the flitter and slung him over a muscular shoulder. That completed his collapse. He spewed the breakfast he'd eaten down George's legs and knew nothing more for a time he could not measure. Ronnie awoke, lying on his back with the sun prying his eyelids apart and someone beating his head with a collection of spoons. At least, that's what it felt like. He had no desire to move, though he would have appreciated quiet, darkness, and a cool, wet cloth on his forehead.
If my father knew...
And what makes you think he doesn't?
What do you mean he knows?
I don't suppose he knows his daughter's involved, no. But something like this, as big as it is, on his favorite resort world, how could he not know?
Something like what?
Oh, I expect you know, little lady.
Every hair on Ronnie's body rose at that little lady. He wanted to leap up and knock that voice into the sea, but he could not move.
It's a hunter's paradise, isn't it? And your dad, or maybe it's her dad, is a famous sportsman, isn't he? And the whole point of sport is you give the prey a chance, huh? Isn't it? That makes it a challenge, see?
Manhunting, as you very well know, since you came here for that purpose.
But it can go two ways, see? Hunting predators, it can always go two ways. And men are the most dangerous. There was a story once.
Everyone knows the story, Sid. Be quiet.
The command in that first voice made a connection for Ronnie. It sounded like Captain Serrano. It sounded like Captain Serrano the time she had ordered him off her bridge, or the time he had overheard her talking to Aunt Ceci about battle. He struggled to open his eyes and found himself blinking up at a dark, unsmiling face.
Well, and what have we here, young man? Who are you?
Ronald Vertigan Boniface Lucian Carruthers, Royal Aerospace Stellar Service.
Ronnie looked around, now that he could see, and there was the odious George, looking remarkably tidy, with a gag stuffed in his mouth and an angry expression on the rest of his face. Bubbles looked almost as angry. He wondered if she was going to come out of her usual wild blonde disguise for the occasion. And Rafa, whom he hoped would someday be his Rafaela, had no expression at all. He had never seen her like that, and he hoped he never would again. The dark face above his did not smile.
Royal ass, eh? And you probably think that means something here.
And you are? I have not the honor...
That's the truth, little boy soldier. You have not the honor indeed. You don't know what honor is.
Little Pete plonks down in a flitter and bumps his poor little head, pukes out his guts, and thinks he has a right to say the H word.
Shut up, Kev. We don't have time for your nonsense any more than his.
A jerk of the head indicated George. The dark eyes contemplated Ronnie.
But you're going to give us the truth, Mr. Ronald Vertigan Boniface Lucian Carruthers of the Royal Assholes. You didn't learn to fly with that bunch of old ladies, boy. Who are you really from?
Hard hands grabbed his ears and shook his head. He had thought it hurt before. Now he knew it had been merely uncomfortable. He felt his eyes water and hated the man for that. His stomach roiled.
I told you, we're from the main lodge. We wanted to get away from the fox hunting.
And try other game?
And just play around.
At the moment, Ronnie didn't care if he did die. His head might as well have a real axe in it as whatever was causing what he felt.
My Aunt Ceci, you wouldn't know her, and that demon captain of hers wanted me to spend all day every day on a horse chasing some miserable little furry thing over fields of cold mud and fences designed to make horses fall down and dump their riders. And we got tired of it.
Ronnie closed his eyes against the bright glare of the forest canopy.
We wanted to rest. We wanted to have fun. I asked Bubbles if there wasn't some place on this miserable dirt ball that wasn't cold and muddy and full of horses. And she said, let's go to the islands.
Oblo?
Ronnie gave himself up to contemplation of his headache and the mystery of his stubbornly unhelpful arms and legs. He finally thought he felt something weighing him down or tying him down, or something of that sort. External, not internal. He was sure he was wiggling his toes. For some reason, the discovery that he probably didn't have a broken neck did not make him feel better.
No weapons. Not with them or on the flitter, except a cat eye. That's standard survival gear on flitters, most worlds. Food and minor medical supplies and stuff they pulled out to take with them. All the IDs check out, as far as we can know, without accessing a link. Flitter ID was still in the active comp. No sweat getting it out. It's Lord Thornbuckle's, all right.
And the beacon?
Back aboard, sir. Same as you said. Tough to make it look like it hadn't ever been out, though. On the other hand, maybe they'll accept all that cracked casing as why it doesn't work. Did my best.
I'm sure you did, Oblo.
Ronnie opened his eyes again to find the dark face he remembered looking across him to someone else.
Why'd you put the beacon back? That's stupid. We need rescue here.
You may need rescue, but we don't need hunters tracking us by that thing.
You shot us!
Ronnie was sure of it, though he saw no weapon that could have served.
Yep. Thought you were the hunters. We had a chance to drop you in the water. Not a bad job of work, the way you got that flitter to land. Wasted all the work on you, looks like now, and we've still got them to deal with. And if they know about you, we've got even more trouble, if that's possible.
Oh.
Ronnie could not think of anything to say and looked at George, but George, gagged, could not argue for him.
I'm sure my father doesn't know.
Bubble's blonde hair looked straggly, coming out of whatever she'd done to keep it in tousled curls. She raked it back with both hands, hooking it behind her ears.
This is our special place. The kid's place. Even if he did something so horrible, he wouldn't do it here.
Kid's place?
We camped here. Every summer until I was 15 or so. Some of the younger cousins still do.
Ronnie let her voice lull him back to sleep. He didn't like being awake anymore.
Is, Petrus, that Ronnie and I are both commissioned officers of the Royal Aerospace Stellar Service.
Poor idiot. You should have left him gagged.
Then Ronnie realized what he'd thought, and woke up the rest of the way, ashamed of himself. He was no longer tied, if he had been tied. He found his memory wobbly on that and other points. And when he tried to sit up, someone's arm came behind him, lifting his shoulders. Even under the forest canopy, he could tell that some hours had passed. The bits of sun poking through came at a different angle. Someone had cleaned his face. He couldn't smell the vomit anymore, and was grateful. Without a word, a brown hand came from behind him and offered a flask of water. He took it and drank. They were all there, Bubbles, Rafa, and George, and the faces he remembered from that nightmarish time when he'd been flat on his back. Now, right side up, he recognized the hostile expressions as exhaustion, fear, uncertainty. He saw only 8 or 9, but noises in the thick undergrowth suggested at least as many more.
Son, the point really is that we know how to fight a war and you don't. You'd get us killed. You damn near got yourself and your girls killed. I don't care how many glittery stripes and pretty decorations you've got in your dress uniform, nor how bright your boots shine. You don't know one useful thing about staying alive in this mess, and I do.
George looked around for support and caught Ronnie's eye.
Good, you're awake now. Tell him. We're officers. We should be in charge.
Ronnie wanted to wait until he could think straight, and then fly back to the mainland. His mind gave a little jerk, like a toy train jumping to another track. They were being hunted, that was it. The men on the island. They were trying to fight back to hunt the hunters. And George thought he and Ronnie should organize that?
He's right, George. We're worse than the girls. They at least know what they don't know. We keep thinking we do know.
He hardly knew what he was saying over a dull pounding in his head, but that made the best sense he could.
You're Petrus, sir? I agree with you.
The dark man gave Ronnie the first friendly look he'd had.
Well, maybe that knock on the head put your brain right side up after all. Oblo, give this lad a ration bar.
The same dark hand that had passed him the water flask held out a greasy, gritty bar that Ronnie recognized as part of the flitter's emergency supplies. He took it and nibbled the end. His body craved the salt-sweet flavor.
Ronnie, you can't let that person ignore your seniority.
I'm not letting him ignore my seniority. I'm ignoring it. Remember what old Top Jenkins said about tooty young cadets?
We aren't cadets anymore. We're officers.
We're prisoners, if you want to be precise. Come on, George. Look at it this way. It's an adventure.
Petrus scowled, but George finally grinned.
It's a saying we have, Petrus. We started in boarding school together, and George would think these things up, or Buttonswood, or Dill, and the rest of us would say how crazy it was, and how much trouble we'd get in, and whoever began it would say, "It's an adventure."
I remember who started it. Arthur, what's his name, remember? Got us into some frightful row, and when we were called up, he said, "Look at it this way, boys. It's an adventure." And we all went in sniggering like fools and got twice as much punishment as usual.
I can see why. This is not an adventure. This is a war. Go in sniggering, as you put it, here, play the fool here, and you'll be dead. Not charmingly, tidily, prettily dead, either.
I know that.
Then act like it.
Petrus turned back to Ronnie.
And you, young man, if you're finally getting sense, get enough to live through this and grow up.
He glanced sideways at the girls. Did he think women were non-entities?
If that's what he thinks, he must not know Captain Harris.
Captain who?
Ronnie didn't realize he'd said the name aloud until the other man reacted.
Serrano. Harris Serrano. She's ex-regular space service, like you.
So that's where she ended up.
A feral gleam lightened Petrus's dark eye. Ronnie was startled. It was the first personal emotion he'd seen Petrus exhibit. Petrus grinned. It was not a nice grin.
She did have a come down after all.
A come down?
To play captain of a rich lady's yacht. Serves her right.
What for?
Ronnie was glad. He too wanted to know, but he had already been chewed out for asking too many questions.
None of your...
Tell him. Why not? You don't want to protect her.
No, that's right enough. But you think these royal ass punks can understand it?
Might learn something.
Ronnie felt a tension between the two men, not quite conflict, and wondered what it could be. Petrus wiped his mouth with his hand and settled back, looking past them.
All right. It started with the Covenado campaign, which is too new to have been in your studies, so don't argue with me about it. Scuttlebutt says it was Admiral Lepescu who thought up the lousy plan. From what I know of him, I wouldn't doubt it. If our captain had followed his orders, most of us would have died, and it wouldn't have accomplished a damn thing. It was a stupid plan and a stupid order.
But
do you want the gag again? Then be quiet. I know what you think. Officers that refuse orders are traitors and should be shot, right?
George nodded and shrugged at the same time, trying not to offend. Ronnie almost laughed aloud, but not when he saw Petrus's face.
Now that's what the rules say. No matter how stupid or how bloody, how unnecessary, officers obey their seniors and enlisted obey officers. Mostly they do, and mostly it works, because when you're not in combat, a stupid order won't kill you, usually. But then there's combat. You expect to die someday. It's not a safe profession, after all. But what you hope for is that your death will mean something. You'll be expended, as the saying is, in some action that accomplishes something more than just turning you into a bloody mess.
Petrus was silent after that, so long that George stirred and opened his mouth. Ronnie waved at him, hoping he would keep quiet. Finally, Petrus looked at both of them.
It's not that anyone doubted Serrano's courage, you know. She'd been in action before. She'd had a couple of decorations you don't get for just sitting by a console and pushing the right buttons. No, what she did, refusing a stupid order that would kill a lot of people without accomplishing any objective, and that was damn brave. And we all knew it. She was risking her career, maybe her life. When it was over, and she faced the inquiry on it, she didn't try to spread the blame. She took it just the way you'd expect. Would have expected from knowing her before. I'd been with her on 3 different ships. I thought I knew what she was. She was facing a court-martial. Dishonorable discharge, maybe prison time or execution. If she couldn't prove that Admiral Lepescu's order was not only stupid but illegal. I was scared for her. I knew she had friends in high places, but not that high. And it's damn hard to prove an admiral's giving bad orders just because he likes to see bloodshed. That was the Serrano I thought I knew. The woman who would risk that. Not the woman who would take the chance to resign her commission before the court and lay the blame on her crew. Leave us to face court-martial and conviction and this sentence.
Petrus waved, a gesture that included the place, the people, the situation.
She didn't come to our trial. She didn't even offer any testimony, any written support, nothing. She dumped us, the very crew she'd supposedly risked her career to save. It didn't make sense, unless her decision to avoid that engagement really was cowardice, or she saw it as a way to leave the service.
Ronnie remembered his first sight of Captain Serrano, the rigidity with which she had held herself, like someone in great pain who will not admit it. He remembered the reaming out she'd given him that time on the bridge, and what he'd heard her say to his aunt. Scathing both times, and he'd sworn to get his vengeance someday. She had held him captive, forced his attention, tamed him, as she'd put it. He had had to watch her take to riding and hunting as if she were born to it, while he loathed every hour on horseback. He had had to hear his aunt's praise of her captain's ability and her scorn of him. That, too, he had sworn to avenge. Now was his chance, and it required nothing of him but silence. He met George's eyes. He had told George, he remembered, what Serrano had said about her past. He had been angry, and he had eavesdropped without shame, and shared the gossip without shame. Now he felt the shame. He could feel his ears burning.
It wasn't that.
Petrus looked at him, brows raised.
She didn't know.
How do you know?
Ronnie dared not look at Rafa. She would be ashamed of him.
I heard her talking to my aunt. They told her, I suppose that admiral you mentioned, that if she stood trial, the crew would be tried with her. But if she resigned, no action would be taken against her subordinates.
Likely. Of course she'd make up a good story for later. She wouldn't want to admit she sold
us. I'm not sure. It could be. Now think, Petrus. Which is more like our Serrano?
She's not my Serrano.
Oblo, Ronnie realized, had never wanted to believe Serrano guilty of treachery. He turned to Ronnie.
Of course, kid. She's your aunt's captain. You'd like her and defend her, I suppose.
Like her? That puffed-up, arrogant, autocratic, bossy... No one could like her. Do you know what she did to Ronnie? To Ronnie, on his own aunt's ship? Slapped him in the face. Ordered him off the bridge, as if he were any stupid civilian. And me... She told me I was nothing but a popinjay, a pretty face with not the sense to find my left foot.
George, never mind.
George looked as regal as he could, which was almost funnier.
No, Ronnie, I've had enough of this. Captain Serrano may have been your aunt's choice, but she was not mine. All those ridiculous emergency drills. I've never seen such a thing on a proper yacht. All that fussing about centers of mass and alternative navigation computer checks and whatnot... I'm not a bit surprised that woman got herself in trouble somewhere. She's obsessed with rules and regulations. That sort always go bonkers sometime. She drove you, the least mischievous of our set, to eavesdrop on her conversations with your aunt.
Enough. Let's hear, and briefly, from you, Ronnie. What precisely did you hear, and under what circumstances?
Well, she had chewed me out and waked us up 3 late shifts running for drills... I wanted to get back at her, so I patched into the audio in my aunt's study. She and my aunt talked a lot, mostly about books or music or art, sometimes about the ship or riding. But my aunt wanted to know about her time in the service, why she resigned. I could tell the captain didn't want to answer, but my aunt can be persuasive. So that's what she said, what I told you before. She was offered a chance to resign her commission rather than face a court-martial, and was promised that if she resigned, no action would be taken against any of her crew. Otherwise, she was told her crew would also be charged, and it was more than likely they'd all be condemned. She cried, Petrus. I don't think she cries often.
That's our Serrano, Petrus. She didn't know. She did it for us. They probably wouldn't let her come back and explain.
Yes. She said that. She had to resign right then, in that office, and not return to the ship. She said that was the worst of it, that someone might think she'd abandon her crew. But at least they'd be safe.
Oh, that miserable excuse for an admiral. He might have done that. He might think it was funny.
Nah, I don't believe that. It's the captain, like you told me at first. Why'd she resign if she wasn't up to something, huh? Stands to reason she has friends to cover for her.
You weren't in her crew. You got no right to judge.
Oblo looked at Ronnie.
You are telling the truth.
I overheard what I told you. And I told George. I hated her. I hoped to find some way to get back at her. But...
But you couldn't quite let us believe the lie, eh?
Petrus smiled.
Well, son, for a royal ass peep, you've got surprising ethics. And what would you want to bet that Admiral Lupescu planned to let her know later what he'd done? When it was too late. When it would drive her to something he could use.
Does he know she's here? Could he have known who hired her? Where she was going?
Lupescu? He could know which fork she ate with if he wanted to.
Harris came out of the shower, toweling her hair, to find Cecilia sitting upright in the desk chair, already dressed for the day's hunt.
I didn't know I was late.
Harris's own clothes lay spread on the bed. She had come from the shower bare, as usual, and shrugged when she realized it was too late for modesty. She hoped anger would not make her blush. Cecilia had no right to invade her room.
You're not.
I can't find Ronnie, or George, or their girlfriends. That's a scar. Harris looked down at the old, pale line of it, then realized why Cecilia was so shocked.
Oh, it's old. No regen tanks aboard light cruisers. If you get cut or burned, you scar.
Harris pulled on her socks, then her riding pants, and grinned at Cecilia.
We consider them decorative.
Barbaric.
True, but necessary. Would you have quit competitive riding if you'd had to live with the scars of your falls?
Well, of course not. Lots of people did in the old days, but it's not necessary now, and...
Neither is fox hunting. Very few things are really necessary when you come down to it. You, me, the horses, all the rituals. If you just wanted to exterminate these pseudo-foxes, you'd spread a gene-tailored virus and that'd be it. If you just wanted to ride horses across fences, you could design a much safer way to do it, and not involve canids.
Hounds.
Whatever.
Harris leaned over and pulled on her boots. They had broken in enough to make this easier, and she no longer felt her legs were being reshaped as the boots came up. She peered into the mirror and tied the cravat correctly, slicked down her hair, and reached for her jacket.
Ready? I'm starved.
You didn't hear me. I can't find Ronnie and the others.
I heard you, but I don't understand your concern. Perhaps they started out early. No, I admit that's not likely. Perhaps they're already at breakfast, or not yet up from an orgy in someone else's room.
No, I checked. Harris opened her mouth to say that in a large, complicated building with dozens of bedrooms, close to other buildings with dozens of bedrooms, four young people who wanted to sleep in could surely find a place beyond an aunt's sight. Then she saw the tension along Cecilia's jaw.
You're worried, aren't you?
Yes. They didn't hunt yesterday. They were supposed to be out with a third pack, and Susanna mentioned she hadn't seen them. The day before, you remember, Ronnie missed a lesson.
But...
I found Buttons, and I asked him. He turned red and said Ronnie, George, and the girls had gone picnicking day before yesterday. He didn't know about yesterday, or said he didn't. And there's more.
When Cecilia didn't go on, Harris sat on the bench at the foot of her bed. She knew that kind of tension. It would do no good to pressure her.
There's a flitter missing. I had to bribe Bunny's staff to find that out. Apparently Bubbles is something of a tease. It's not the first time she's taken out her father's personal flitter, and the staff doesn't like her to get into trouble. They cover for her with the spare. So Bunny doesn't know a thing.
And they've been gone a day, 2 days, maybe three?
Yes. According to the log, and they do keep one, just to be sure Bubbles doesn't get hurt, they left well before dawn, day before yesterday. Filed a flight plan for some island lodge called White Wings. I've never been there, but I've got the map.
Cecilia handed Harris the data cube. Harris fitted it into the room's display.
The problem is they aren't at White Wings either. It's a casual lodge. No resident staff, though it's fully equipped. There's a satellite beacon on the flitter, of course, and there's been a steady signal here.
Cecilia pointed to an island much nearer than White Wings.
No distress call, and it's at another lodge. Michaels, who's the flitter chief, thinks Bubbles just changed her mind and decided to hide out on another island in case I followed the trail this far.
She'd know about the beacon, though.
She'd think I wouldn't.
Harris stared at the display.
Ah. What's on this other island?
Bandon? It's another lodge, more a family place, although it's got a large landing field. Michael says the family goes there every spring at least once. When the children were younger, they used to camp on one of the smaller islands, while the adults stayed on Bandon. He says it's lovely. Forested islands, clear water, reefs. Imported cetaceans, some of the small ones that Michael said play with humans. Bubbles has always liked it better than any place on the planet, he says. White Wings is colder, usually stormier.
That makes sense. So you think they're all sunning themselves, swimming lazily?
No. I can't say why, but I think they're in trouble. And I can't imagine what. This is a safe world. There's nothing on the islands to hurt them. I asked Michaels. Their comm links are unbreakable. If they needed help, they'd ask for it.
They can't be in any real trouble. Not all four of them, but...
Tell Bunny.
When Cecilia's expression changed, Harris realized she'd used his nickname for the first time. He had always been Lord Thornbuckle to her.
I don't want to do that, not yet. He's upset right now with that anti-blood sports person who got herself invited under an alias. He's not at his best.
But if his daughter... No, never mind. What do you want me to do?
I'm not sure. I don't suppose there's any way this sweet delight could tell.
Harris smacked her forehead with the flat of her hand.
Of course. But can I get a closed channel, a secure channel from the house?
Yes, with my authorization. We'd best do it from my room.
Cecilia's room had even more windows on the morning side of the house. No wonder she woke so early, and was half again as large as her own. The desk comp looked the same, however, and Cecilia soon had what she considered a secure line to the station. She handed the headset to Harris.
Captain Serrano, a secure line to the officer on deck, Sweet Delight.
At once, Captain.
The screen lit to show the familiar bridge, warped a bit by the wide-angle lens, and nav-first Sirkin. She looked only slightly surprised.
Captain Serrano.
I'd like a scan report from, oh, say 55 hours back. Did you log a flitter flight from the main lodge, this location, to an island group to the west?
Yes, ma'am. That was my shift, and I remember it. Let me bring up the log and scan.
The log display came online, a narrow stripe along the side of the screen, with time and date displayed in both standard and planetary local. The log entry, terse and correct, noted the size of craft, the course, and the recognition code of the flitter beacon. The scan proper, a maze of graphics and numbers, matched the log, except in one particular.
They signaled. They called a fixed station, probably the landing field at Bandon, and something responded.
Michael says it's an automatic loop. There's no one at the field unless family's expected.
Harris pointed to a squiggle she knew Cecilia could not interpret.
Hmm. And what's this? Sirkin, did you log the other traffic?
Yes. Although since it didn't have a satellite locator signal, I assumed they were just maintenance flights or something.
Or something.
Harris felt an unreasoning surge of glee and grinned at Cecilia.
Good instincts, Lady Cecilia. Something is definitely going on out there.
Smugglers, I suppose. I never saw a world without some of it. Probably off-duty crews.
No. At least some of them are space service. Regular captain, like yourself.
How do you know?
I was sort of listening in to see how good that new scan technology was.
And you picked up fleet traffic?
If she had, Harris would report it. Small thanks, though, she'd get for it.
No, ma'am. It was a private shuttle from a charter yacht docked at Station 3. Someone groundside asked if Admiral Lepescu was aboard, and the shuttle said yes.
Harris felt as if someone had transplanted ice water into her arteries. She opened her mouth to ask more, but Cecilia laid a hand on her arm.
I want to go off to them.
Why?
Harris's mind had clamped onto the Admiral's name. She could not think why Cecilia would want to follow him.
To bring them back, before Bunny finds out.
Forget about Lepescu. Focus on the youngsters, Ronnie and all.
Harris struggled to keep her mind on the original problem. They had gone off illicitly and had not signaled, and their craft's locator beacon still functioned. And Cecilia wanted to bring them back. That ought to be simple enough. She forced herself to look closely at all the details Sirkin had displayed. One caught her eye at once.
Sirkin, that flitter locator beacon, it's not on Bandon.
No, Captain. There's a whole group of islands, and it's on the one just north of Bandon.
Harris turned to Cecilia.
But the family lodge is on Bandon proper, surely, with the landing field?
I think so. I don't really know. I've never been there. Michael's implied it was on the same island.
Of course, they may have decided to camp on the beach.
Harris looked over the rest of the data.
You said Bubbles had camped on one of the other islands. Odd, the flight path of that flitter doesn't look right. You'd think they'd have gone by Bandon to pick up supplies, at least. Did they take off with full camping equipment? Or would Michaels know?
I could ask. You think they meant to land at Bandon and didn't? They crashed?
Could be.
Harris felt frustration boiling through her mind. Once, she would have had the information she needed. Once, she would have had trusted subordinates to find out anything she lacked. People she could trust. She would not let herself remember more than the trust. And she might have the chance to see Lupescu again. Without fleet interference. Without witnesses.
Lupescu, you bastard. What are you doing here?
I remember. He was the admiral who got you in trouble.
Harris looked up, startled out of her train of memories.
He was the admiral who nearly got us all killed. The trouble was negligible, really. The question is, why is he here? To cause me more grief? It would have been easy for him to find out who hired me and where we were going, but I can't see why or what he can do worse than he's done. Aside from that...
Bunny didn't invite him. I have the authorization codes for Bunny's personal guest list database, and I've run them on the desktop. Never has, according to this. Let's see. No, nor any of Bunny's relatives. He's another crasher.
Here? No, because Sirkin said that transmission went to a shuttle landing at Bandon.
Where nobody's supposed to be. Where I didn't know there was a landing zone equipped for shuttles.
Whose ship did he come on?
All I know is it's a charter yacht out of Dismas, the Prairie Rose. I'd have to have authorization to find out more.
We'll get that. But post the orders to monitor that flitter beacon and any and all traffic on that island or the ones next to it. I want flitter IDs, comm transcripts, everything.
Yes, Captain. Right away.
And be prepared to patch my signal from a flitter or other light craft. Lady Cecilia and I will be checking on that beacon ourselves.
Harris raised her brows at Cecilia, who nodded. It was crazy, really. At the least, they ought to tell their host and let him assign his own security forces to it. But the thought that she might come face to face with Lupescu, unwitnessed, slid sweet and poisonous into her mind. With Cecilia's authorization, she could confront him, an uninvited gatecrasher, and demand the answers that had eluded her before. She closed her eyes a moment, imagining his surprise, feeling her hands close around his throat. Her mouth flooded with the imagined taste of victory, and she had to swallow.
Harris?
Cecilia was looking at her strangely. It was that expression on the faces of her classmates at the academy that had first given her an inkling that she had inherited her parents' gift of command, the essential ruthlessness of decision.
Just thinking.
Harris pulled her mind back onto the designated track. It was crazy, almost as crazy as the orders she had refused to obey. She and Cecilia had no idea what was going on over there. She knew Lupescu was dangerous in any context, and yet they were preparing to fly off as if it were an afternoon picnic, as if they were safe, protected by the social conventions of Bunny's crowd.
But Lupescu isn't part of Bunny's crowd. Why is he here? What is he doing? How many unauthorized visitors are on this island, and why haven't Ronnie and Bubbles called in?
At worst, I suppose we'll find the crashed flitter, and they'll all be dead. Otherwise, they'd have called in if they needed help.
Harris dug through her day pouch for the notepad and stylus she carried out of habit.
We need to do a little planning here. Worst case, all dead. Next worst, injured, needing evacuation. We really should bring some help. The local security force, a medic or two.
I don't want to. It's my nephew, after all. If I can get him out of this without Bunny's knowledge, keep it in the family.
Have you considered violence?
Cecilia looked bewildered.
I told you about Lupescu. If he's here, uninvited, I would expect some kind of nastiness going on. There are stories about him and his cronies.
But what could he be doing? He doesn't have any troops to command here. Wait, you don't think he's trying to invade or something? Take over Bunny's holdings?
No, I don't think so.
It did not make sense that a mid-list admiral would alienate so powerful a family. Besides, he could not invade without troops, and one shuttle load would hardly be enough. Harris thought a moment.
Wait, remember that Kettlegrave woman?
The one blathering on about blood sports?
Yes, she said something about fox hunting leading to other things. Those who would hunt innocent animals being just as willing to hunt people.
Ridiculous! Bunny's as gentle as his nickname.
Bunny is, but Lupescu is most definitely not. What if there's some kind of illicit hunting? No, not people, of course, but something else that Bunny wouldn't like, with the fox hunting season as cover.
Even as Harris said it, she remembered that Lupescu belonged to a semi-secret officers' club. She had not been invited to join, but Perrin Sothanus had. He'd refused, and kept his oath not to talk of what he'd learned. But she had heard him say it was really sick. They think the only true blood sport is war.
You have a wicked mind.
I know. But it makes sense. You told me that Bunny has some rare and valuable animals that are practically pets. What if they're being hunted? We'll go armed and expect trouble. It's the only sensible way.
Armed?
Of course. We don't know what those youngsters have gotten into, and we have to be able to get them and ourselves out.
Harris ached for her lost crew, for Oblo and Petrus, who would have stood behind her in anything. But she would have to do this alone, because there was no other way. At least she could prepare Cecilia for what they might face.
Rifles at a minimum. And if you can use a bow...
Of course, but why?
It's quieter.
Harris had pulled out her notepad again and was figuring on it. Supplies. They'd need food, medical supplies, ammunition for the weapons she intended to take, protective gear, whatever communications and electronic gear she could lay her hands on. She looked at the wall chronometer. In half a standard hour. They'd need to leave before the day's hunt gathered. It was crazy. They should tell Bunny. They should use his staff for this.
Should we take something larger than a standard flitter?
Like what?
Harris computed cubage and mass on her notepad and entered the total. They would have to change from hunting clothes, too, or take along something more suitable and change en route.
A supply flitter, I was thinking. We could take more supplies, and if one of them is injured...
Good idea. Will they sign one out to you?
I've been a family friend for years. Of course they will. Michaels will be glad someone's checking on the young people.
Fine. Then get this list loaded as soon as you can. I'll pack my kit and what else we need.
The weapons.
Yes, the weapons.
That morning, the Green Hunt gathered at Stone Lodge, so the house staff at the main house seemed less rushed. The housekeeper's eyebrows went up slightly when Harris mentioned weapons, but the brief explanation that Lady Cecilia wanted to find her nephew brought them back down, as if Lady Cecilia could be expected to take after her relatives with firepower.
Senador and Cleo have a shop here during the season. I imagine they would have anything Lady Cecilia might want.
Thank you.
Senador and Cleo were a firm of weapons dealers as famous in their way as the great fashion houses. Once she'd heard the name, Harris remembered seeing the S&C logo outside one of the little stone buildings that made up the commercial row. Saddlers, bootmakers, tailors, and bloodstock agents. Senador and Cleo's local representative welcomed her with a wink and a smile.
Lady Cecilia, huh? What's she doing now, deciding to turn Elfus hunter? So you're her captain. You look like regular military.
Harris had thought of a good story on the way over.
I was. Look, I'm buying two lots. They'll need separate accounting. Lady Cecilia's yacht is woefully undergunned. The crew's arms are pitiful. I finally convinced her that in some of the places she wants to travel, she needs to arm the crew with something more advanced than muzzle loaders from the family museum.
A lot of these aristocrats are like that. They don't expect to need real protection.
And most of them probably don't. Such as the ones who make a safe round from hunting here to deep-sea fishing on Fandro and back to court for the season. But you know Lady Cecilia isn't like that. So I'm going to do my job and see that she isn't hijacked somewhere.
Well, we don't carry many of that sort of thing down here, but let's see.
The holo catalog showed something that looked like the landing troops' rifles and submachine guns. Exactly what Harris had been hoping for.
Here. Yeah. These are made by Zeckerd, who, as you know, supply the fleet marines. Ours, of course, go through additional testing from the factory. We have a gross of each model up at home station, and we could deliver anything up to that quantity directly to Lady Cecilia's yacht. The Sweet Delight, isn't it?
Harris wondered if Lupescu knew that somewhere on home station were a gross each of military-quality rifles and the stubby-barreled weapons which had been called ooze for time out of mind. Harris remembered that one instructor at the academy had said they were supposed to be 007s, but through a computer glitch, they'd been renamed. The landing force's gory jest was that they were called ooze because that's what they made of anyone foolish enough to get in the way. And how many were on the other stations?
That would cause problems, at least now. You've probably heard that we've a standing watch aboard.
Yes, that's why I
thought the station master was none too pleased about that. Lady Cecilia is sure he won't like having that crew armed with modern weapons. Of course they're harmless. It's only a handful, and most of them don't yet know how to use these.
Harris tapped the holo catalog, and the image shivered.
But she said to gather the weapons here and transport them under her personal seal and responsibility when we leave. She is concerned as well that such weapons look too real. You know, it would ruin her decorating scheme or something. I wondered if you had a small number of those which could be customized to look more like hunting weapons.
Ah, yes. Here.
The catalog image flicked to something with a stock of burnished wood instead of extruded carbon fiber alloy and a civilian-style sighting system and computer socket.
It's the same exactly, but with add-on about 200 grams heavier. It does cost more.
Perfect. 20 of the rifles and 5 subs.
The ooze had been prettified with wood and inlay, but less successfully. They would pass, however, for the weapon many explorers carried on pioneer worlds.
I don't have that many set up, but it doesn't take long. The hunt's away today, and my techs are both free. A few hours only.
How many do you have ready? I wanted to show Milady what they would look like.
If Brazil wood and Cora wood are acceptable, I've got a couple of beauties already made up.
He vanished behind a mesh grill and returned with 2 of the rifles and a single submachine gun. The rifle stocks had the curly green and blue grain of Brazil wood, probably from a plantation on this very planet. The ooze's wood decoration was in the pale yellow and gray grain of Devian Cori wood. Harris ran her fingers over both. The rifles felt silky, and the sub a bit tacky, giving a grip that would always hold no matter what. She picked up each weapon to check its balance.
You'll want to fire them. Our range is back here.
Just a moment. This isn't all. On Lady Cecilia's personal account, not the yacht account, I will need to select personal weapons for her.
She flipped through the catalog and allowed the salesman to lead her toward the items she already knew she wanted. Light hunting rifles with day and night optics, IR range finding, and computer links for special purposes, a narrow-beam optical weapon that could also be used to operate ship controls, personal protective gear. The salesman seemed to consider it natural that she ordered for herself as well, but she dared not put vests and helmets for the young people on the list. Then it was done, and he led her through another mesh grill to the indoor firing range without waiting for her opinion. She forced herself to follow with no sign of hurry. Surely Cecilia wouldn't get the flitter loaded in the time limit she'd given her, and despite her need to hurry, her training held. You could not trust a weapon you had not personally tested. When all the weapons had checked out, as she had been sure they would, she came back to the main showroom and glanced around.
I'll contact you when Lady Cecilia approves the choice of wood for the stocks. And I'm hoping to convince her to buy appropriate armor for the crew as well. We'll be using these in the next few days. I'll need ammunition.
The salesman began stacking boxes of clips.
Here, and I presume a weapons cart?
Harris nodded, glad that she would not have to pay for this. Cecilia's credit cube went into the reader, and the assembled weaponry stacked neatly into a covered cache on a cart that looked like a miniature flitter.
Palm printed?
Harris laid her palm on the membrane set in one side of the thing's bow.
It won't open the cache to anyone else. It'll follow you. If you want it to stay somewhere, palm print and say stay. But I'd keep it with you. If it's stolen, someone could break in. Local law says those weapons are your responsibility now.
Thank you.
Harris retrieved Cecilia's cube. She hadn't even looked at the total. It was like going into fleet refitting. On the way back to the flitter bays, Harris's mind caught up with her again. What she was about to do, with Lady Cecilia and a supply flitter, was exactly what Admiral Lupescu had demanded that she do with her crew and ship. What she had refused to do, in fact. Why was she so willing now to charge into an obvious trap? If she wouldn't risk a crew of professionals, why would she risk one rich old lady? And what did that say about her loyalty to her employer? If she tried this and failed, Lupescu would have beaten her twice. He would have made her play his game, something she couldn't avoid as a military officer. But now she had options. If she could think of them, if she had time, if she could convince her employer, who was even more stubborn, if less vicious, than Admiral Lupescu. Of course, she could try another end play and tell Bunny herself. Let Lady Cecilia fire her, if that's what it came to. But that's what she'd done last time, and it hadn't worked. She did not have to make the same mistake twice. This time, if what she suspected was true, Lupescu was in the trap, not her. She could win, using her own strategy, and prove she'd been right. But she had to convince Cecilia.
This is the island we're on.
Petrus outlined it on the chart. They had survived their first night on the island. Ronnie felt much better and ignored the dull pain in his head. He had kept that first ration bar down, and another this morning. He was sure he was over his concussion.
About 8 kilometers by 5, but most of it's narrower. Relief's about 200 meters. This hill's given as 220. It's steeper on the west, but nowhere difficult, except for this little ravine here. Now, the cover is mixed. Open forest on these slopes, and down near the water, scrub undergrowth. It's as full of trails as a kid's playground in some park.
That's what it was. I told you. We all camped over here. My cousins, too. About 5 years ago was the last time I remember. We'd stay here while the grown-ups were on Bandon. We'd sail over in little boats. My father thought it up. It was out of some old books from England on old Earth. Kids went camping on an island.
Yeah, well, this isn't camping.
Do you remember seeing anything that indicated someone else used the island that way?
No. No, in fact, we always had to clear the trails every year. I wanted to have someone else do it, but my father insisted we have the fun, as he put it.
So, this kind of hunting was either somewhere else or not going on then. It would be interesting to know when it started, if your father hired someone new who could have set it up. It would take connections. Someone who knew likely clients.
I'm trying to think. Daddy mentioned he'd hired a new outrange supervisor when Vittorio Zeltsin retired. Oh, but I don't remember what he said. It didn't seem important.
Not as important as staying alive. And we need to break this up and get moving. Let me finish the briefing. They introduce new prey when they've confirmed killing all but two of the old ones. Those are the Preeves, the previous survivors. That's how we know some of the things we do. And that's where our few weapons come from. New prey is given 2 days free, then hunting resumes. They supply basic rations every 4 days at a single site on the west side of the island during a non-hunting period. They hunt no more than 14 standard hours a day. The problem is, we're not sure which 14 hours. Sometimes they do a split shift. If we don't keep a constant watch, they're over here before we know it. What the Preeves told us is that the first week they hunt only in daylight. That weeds out the really stupid and incapable, they think. Then they start night hunting. They have dark gear. We don't. If they hunt all night, they'll leave us alone the following day, but they usually hunt only half a night shift, from sundown to midnight, or midnight to sunrise, say. And we've been here a couple weeks, so they're night hunting almost every night. Last night they didn't. I expect they were waiting to see if you were followed.
If they have Barstow sensors, why don't they just find us and wipe us out?
And they don't use Barstows. Again, that's not sporting in their books. The Preeves say if someone eludes them the full month, they'll use a Barstow to find and capture him, but that almost never happens.
But if they know we're here, and they want to eliminate witnesses, won't they use Barstow sooner this time?
I was hoping you wouldn't ask that. They might, and if they do, we're out of luck. We can't build a shelter that will shield us from Barstow scans and escape notice and flyovers. The island's not deep enough, and the woods aren't thick enough.
That other flyover, that could have been a rescue attempt, but we weren't there.
Ronnie had missed the flyover, But they'd told him about the flitter that came, hovered above the wreck, and then departed.
They'd only want to rescue us if they could do it before we made contact with the prey.
Looking at Bubbles now, Ronnie could hardly believe that was her name. None of the fluff had left, none at all.
They'll think if we meet them, the secret's out. Either they have to kill us all and fake an accident somehow, or they have to escape. And even if they do escape, there's the evidence.
So the only logical thing for them to do is add our names to the list and go on. I don't like this. Yet, if they kill us, there'll be the evidence then, too, when someone comes to look.
Unless they try to capture you four, and then kill you in some way that can be explained. They might well try a chemical weapon, knock you unconscious, take you up in a flitter, even your own, and drop you onto the rocks. If we're all dead and gone, or if they can create that accident on another island, it might well pass. Ordinarily, the Prieves say they don't use chemicals, but now they might.
Ronnie lifted his head. Petrus was alert, too. Something, but he couldn't define it.
Flitter. I'll see about it.
We make a plan every day. You have to. Else it's just running and waiting to be killed. That's what's happened to most. Or they make a plan and run the same one every day. That won't work either. The only hope is to make the hunters work. Get back at them.
Attack them? Well, you do have more men, don't you? How many hunters are there?
More, but not more firepower. Not more resources. We can't attack in force, but we do faint. We scare them sometimes. And they like that, the Prieves tell us. I hate to give them the satisfaction, but it does make them slow down and be careful. As for how many, it seems to vary. I'm sure we're not seeing the same ones each day. If it's anything like big game hunting, there's a larger party of hunters over on Bandon, and they take turns. I'd like to kill them, but so far we haven't.
Has anyone ever?
So I hear, but you don't know how much to believe. The Prieves they send with us are not exactly reliable. They've been known to turn a group that was doing too well. We found a locator on Sid, for instance.
But you didn't kill him. Why not?
You kill everyone who just might hurt you someday? Get some sense, boy. Everyone who's been through this has knowledge we need. We can't afford to lose anyone. He knows we know he might turn. He knows his best chance at survival is with us, at least now.
So how many do you have altogether?
Never you mind. What you don't know, you can't tell. But we've lost only two in the time we've been here. The Prieves say that's much better than usual. Now, what we're going to do is this.
Petrus leaned over the map.
We've got to separate you four, because they need you most. Can't let them get you in a lump. The longer it takes, the more chance one of you will be alive to report all this. At the same time, I can't protect you all. My people wouldn't go for it, and I don't have the ability anyway. So you ladies will have to go here.
He pointed to the ravine on the map.
Unless you can find those hiding places you think you remember.
He looked at Bubbles.
Oh, I wish Kel hadn't been so secretive. I'm sure there's a cave somewhere.
Petrus ignored this. He had not been impressed with a possible cave she had never seen for herself.
You want me to go somewhere alone?
It would be best. That ravine's hard to climb. They avoid it except at the ends, and there's a lot of cover. Big rocks and so on. They go along the edges and watch both ends, but they can't see everything. If you tuck yourself under a boulder, that's as safe a place as I can offer.
I want to do something, not sit under a rock and shiver.
We don't have any training, Rafa. Not even as much as Ronnie and George. The best we can do is stay out of the way.
I suppose you're right.
Rafa glanced at Ronnie and away. He felt his heart contract. She was thinking about him. He knew it. Petrus nodded to Ronnie and George.
And you two are another problem. You might be useful or not. I can't tell until I see you in action. What we're going to do is try to make them think you wandered into the forest north of the stream, maybe heading for the point up there. It's more rugged country. I want you to go up there now and make some trail. Scuff and scrape as if you're dragging something or someone. Drop something unimportant that might have fallen off your packs. There's no way to disguise what happened to your flitter, but they may not have realized we've met. If you headed that way and were keeping watch to the south and east, you could have gotten away from us. Not really, but they might believe it.
In other circumstances, it would have been a pleasant afternoon's hike up the ravine. Bubbles found it hard to remember the danger. The lower forest smelled as fresh as she remembered, and then the scramble up the rocks took her breath away. A clear rivulet still splashed from pool to pool, and red and gold amphibians still hurled themselves into the water as she came near. A few rocks had moved in seasonal floods. She recognized one boulder by an odd inclusion, now upside down from where it had been, but most of the trail was familiar. Higher on the slope, a breeze stirred, lifting the hair on the back of her head as it rose from the forest canopy below. She could see more of the sky now, and smell the sea as well as the rock and flowers. Rafa, behind her, scuffed her feet in the dirt, but said nothing. Bubbles was glad. She wanted to combine the old memories, once thrust away as too childish, with the present experience. Finally, she stopped, winded, on a broad, flat outcrop where the ravine angled south, away from the shore. Looking back, she could see nothing but billows of green concealing the shape of the land itself. Rafa dropped to the rock and lifted the hair from her neck.
You did this every year?
Most years. For a while, when my Uncle Jean would come and bring the cousins. I suppose really Mother wanted us out of the main house, away from the more important visitors. All of us together could be noisy. When we camped over here, we'd divide into two groups at least, and play hunting games, stuff we'd read about or seen in the old cubes.
We used to go to my Aunt Katie's house and ride up in the hills on Niger. No pretty islands there.
Ugh. Cold and wet all year round, isn't it? You didn't camp out, surely?
Of course. Better than in this heat. We pretended to be steppe nomads and so forth, but mostly we lived in caves. There was a big one, very handy, about a day's ride away.
Bubbles glowered at the water.
Cave. I wish I knew if Kel told the truth. He said it was big enough for all of us, but he wouldn't share it, the pig. There's no place else as good, if it's real.
You're sure you have no idea where it is?
No, only where it isn't. We did look, but we never found it in the likely places, up here or in the valley between this hill and the next. And knowing where not to look still leaves a lot of island. Why? You think we should look?
If we found it, we'd be a lot safer than hiding under a rock. And we'd better be going. We certainly aren't safe sitting here chatting.
Oh, right. We'll climb straight up over the spine. I hope the old trail along the crest is still there. It has a few hidey holes I know about.
Along the spine of the island, the rock outcrops formed stout pillars, 2 to 3 meters tall, in ragged rows that wobbled along parallel to the crest like rotting teeth. Between the rows, the hollows were unevenly filled with soil and overgrown with thorny vines and bushes. A winding thread of trail had been hacked clear at the very crest. Bubbles could not tell if it had been cut by hunters or hunted. It didn't really matter. They would have to get off it quickly, because the hunters certainly knew about it. She counted the pillars. If only she could remember the pattern. 3 tall ones, a short, 2 tails, and then 2, 3 short ones. There. She squeezed between 2 of the shorter rocks. Had she been that much thinner 5 years ago, or had the rocks shifted? And then crouched to wiggle beneath the huge briar that lay over what had always been her own special hiding place. The hooked thorns scraped on her knapsack as she slithered further in, her nose hardly off the dark, dank-smelling soil. It hadn't felt this small the last time.
You have to go under this thing, Rafa. You can't go through it with anything short of power tools.
Oh, give me a step pony any day.
But Rafa slithered very efficiently for someone who had often pretended disdain for physical exertion.
Do you want me to do anything about the way we came in?
No.
Bubbles edged past the cluster of woody stems and felt around the far side of it. She had had a little hole there once, with a box in it, but she couldn't see. It was dark under the briar's canopy after the brilliant sunlight on the trail, a warm brown gloom lightened by freckles of sun.
As much as we've shaken it, the outer branches will go back down. I used to do this all the time, and the guys never found me.
The little hole in which she'd tucked a box full of handy items years before had grown into something a hand span across and deeper than her fingers. Burrow. Something was living there. She tried to remember just what did live on this island. Nothing venomous, nothing particularly large or dangerous. Except the hunters. She realized she'd forgotten them for a few minutes. Here, where her safe childhood was so real, and the hunters hardly believable. On the far side of the briary tangle, lodged in fallen leaves against another standing stone, Bubbles found her box. She blessed her younger self for insisting she wanted a real expedition box, the kind that was supposed to last through anything. She dragged it out of the leaves and scrunched sideways so that Rafa could come up beside her.
I forgot this the last time we were here. We were in a hurry to leave. I was going to St. Eleanor's for the first time, and by the time I'd remembered, I'd left it. There was no time to go back.
The box had no lock, only an L-shaped catch, now crusted with dirt and time. Bubbles broke a fingernail on it. Probably nothing in it. A decayed sandwich, some childish bauble. But something drove her to open it.
Let me try.
Bubbles slid the box over to her and sucked her bruised fingertip. Rafa had picked up a twig and used that to prod out the caked dirt around the latch. When she pushed, the latch moved minutely. She handed the box back.
Here, you open the box. It's yours.
Bubbles felt a curious reluctance to open it, as odd as the determination a moment ago to make that latch move. Silly, she thought. There could be nothing really useful in this box. Not as useful as the things in the survival packs on the flitter. Just junk that would remind her what a silly child she had been. She struggled for a moment, having forgotten the exact movement it took to pry the lid up. The box had a good seal on it. Then it lay open, a time capsule from her childhood, her forgotten treasures shaking a little from the movement of her hand. A seashell, one of the purple cone-shaped ones. A bracelet woven of dune grass. She blushed, remembering who had woven it and why. A little black blob, smooth all over, raked from the fire the time Kel had melted the handle from the frying pan. A single sheet of photocells, ready to be spread in the sunlight again, if she had anything to recharge. A bit of faded ribbon. She remembered clearly the shade of purple it had been. A whistle, a foil-wrapped ration bar, a tube of first aid ointment, and a packet of bandages. A length of fine fish line, neatly coiled, with two hooks and a handful of differently shaped sinkers. And the compact silvery locator beacon, with the lanyard still looped through the ring on top.
Isn't that a... Yes, and it will work!
Bubbles looked at the charge level on the side. As she'd expected, it had held its charge. The good ones did, and her dad had always provided them with good ones. Besides, she had the photocells to top it up with.
We can get help! Ow! Ow!
She sat up cheerfully, only to ram her head into the nest of thorns close above. Her eyes watered, and she held very still. It was the only way with these island briars. Jerk away, and she'd lose half her hair and part of her scalp. In the time it took Rafa to work her free, she was able to think why they couldn't use the locator yet. There would be no easy rescue, any more than easy extrication from the briar.
Oh, but if we can get to Bandon. Oh, if we could steal their flitter, maybe. Ow! While they're hunting the others, this will override anything. There are more of them on Bandon. Hold still yet. You've got a thorn right in your scalp. Do these things leave the husk in? Sometimes, and it festers if they do. Oh, get it all if you can. Oh!
Bubbles was a little surprised at how deft Rafa's fingers were, and how calm she was staying. Was this the same Rafa who had seemed an obsessive warrior?
There. I don't think there are any husks, but if you'll hand me that tube of gunk... Thanks. I can put a dab on a few places. Yes, they were bleeding a bit. That'll keep the flies off.
How long has it been?
Bubbles put everything back in the box and latched it. They had left Petrus and the others before noon, and she realized they had better think about where to spend the night. Light came to them between the stones, sideways. The slope below, on the west side of the island, would still be in daylight for a while. But where would the hunters go? Up here along the high trail? Along the slopes?
Should we stay here? We're out of sight, but if they have any kind of senses...
I don't know a better place, not without time to look for it.
Bubbles peeked out the west side of the tangle, They were high enough that she could see out over the lower forest to the sea. The few clouds drifted past, their shadow sliding up the slope.
The main thing is to keep well away from Petrus and the others. Someone has to get back.
Oh!
Rafa's gasp came just as Bubbles realized one shadow wasn't sliding upslope. Small, regular, it moved swiftly against the wind, downslope to the south of them, and then ran along parallel to the ridge.
Eyes down!
Bubbles took her own advice. Surely the briar was thick enough. Old, tangled, too dense for anyone to see through. But every freckle of light suggested it was as porous as a fishing net. She felt sure she had something shiny on her back, something that would glitter. She should take it off. But her arms had no strength. She lay, hardly breathing, trembling. The flitter's shadow passed over them, as if a cold hand lay on her back and went somewhere else. North, she thought, toward the tip of the island. But she dared not move.
So, they're here. And it's not a game.
No.